It's Thursday, November 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President-elect Trump takes his time making top appointments to his administration.
This will be a government focused on turning President-elect Trump's victory into real progress for the American people.
Republican leaders promise to deliver on Trump's pledges. Also ahead, solace and comfort is found on the subway walls. Russia withdraws from the International Criminal Court, and where you can see rare Rolling Stones memorabilia. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump says his transition to power is going smoothly, rebuffing reports of tough infighting among key advisors about top national security appointments in his new government. Trump said on his Twitter account it's a, quote, very organized process taking place as I decide on cabinet and many other positions. Trump said he had talked with numerous world leaders since his stunning upset victory a week ago in the lengthy 2016 presidential election campaign, including those from China, Russia, Britain, Saudi Arabia, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. The president-elect also dismissed accounts in the New York Times and other publications that he was trying to get top-level security clearance for three of his adult children, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Ivanka Trump, and possibly her husband, Jared Kushner, all of whom are advising him on key appointments 2 months before his January 20th inauguration. Some cabinet discussions have centered on whether to name former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani as Secretary of State. The 72-year-old Giuliani has little foreign policy experience, but he was a staunch advocate for the Republican Trump throughout his campaign against Democrat Hillary Clinton. Questions, however, have been raised about Giuliani's overseas investments that might prove to be conflicts of interest were he be picked as the country's top diplomat. Information out of the Trump camp has been sparse, as VOA's Tina Trin inside Trump Tower in New York explains to International Edition host Ira Melman.
We're behind a rope line here right inside the front lobby of Trump Tower, right in front of the four elevators that lead up to his office and the executive suites. And so far, we know as much as what the press is reporting. We are stationed here throughout the day, trying to catch people as they come and go. It's almost like we're a bit like a celebrity paparazzi, and we're given information barely at all, really, unless we yell out to people and they want to come over. But for the most part, we are ignored, and we have to chase people down, but now they're even preventing us from doing that. So we're kind of roped behind this velvet rope and trying to grab people as they come and go, but it's a hard process, and every once in a while we get a few answers, but they're the same as, they're pretty general, and it's basically we're on track, transition team looks great. When you press them for specifics, no names other than the two appointments that we both know so far, which is Steve Bannon and Ryan Priebus.
And nothing else. So has anybody come out? Have you talked to anybody about what's going on? And I'm sorry, as I said, you drew the assignment, kiddo, and that's it. So anybody else tell you anything else?
Kellyanne Conway just got back from D.C. She was in D.C. meeting with the transition team over there and said that everything is looking good, that they're excited, that putting a government together is obviously takes a lot of work, and they're not ready to name names. We're just hoping for a hard and fast like date for any type of press conference, any type of official information, and yet there's still a bit of secrecy, you know, surrounding specifics here, and we're hard pressed to try and get more specific answers out of these folks, trying to get his aides as they come and go. And you know, yesterday, for example, Mike Pence was in town and came through. One of his aides gave us the heads up that he was going to make a statement. He walked in, said nothing to us, walked straight into the elevators, took the elevators up. We waited all day for him to come down and maybe eventually make that statement that we were promised. At the end of the day, around 6 o'clock or so, he walked out and said nothing other than great day, So this is kind of what we're working with at this point.
Well, we do know, and because nobody saw it, we're guessing that Trump went out for dinner with his family last night, but he didn't follow protocol. Mm-hmm. Explain that.
Yeah, we basically learned the remaining poolers who were here, they received an official lid, a quote-unquote lid, which indicates that there's no more official activity happening for the remainder of the evening, that reporters can essentially go home. So we received that lid, and yet after that lid occurred, was given to us, we found out through a tweet that he was actually having dinner at 21 Club, which is a local restaurant not too far away. And the remaining poolers who were here got in a cab, went to 21 Club. When they arrived, one of them called Hope Hicks, the press person, and she came out and said that we would have to be divided. The local New York press were able to go in, but people with no New York press tags had to remain outside. They were pushed further down the sidewalk and essentially trying to see what they could get as people were leaving. I think they managed to get a reaction from Ivanka Trump as she left the restaurant. But having to shout out questions from at least 150 feet away from the restaurant behind a dumpster, less. So this is kind of, there's no rules regarding this right now. We're told that they will eventually set up some type of briefing room, but we have no specific on timeline.
VOA's Tina Trin inside of Trump Tower in New York, along with many frustrated journalists. We're not frustrated because it's time for us now to check out what people are saying on the web. And as always, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
It's going to be an awards-like segment to be discussed, right?
That's right. And let's start with Bob Dylan. Oh, the American singer-songwriter is apparently too busy to receive his Nobel Prize in Literature. You can find an image of the committee's statement on Dylan's absence at the upcoming Nobel Prize ceremony next month, and it looks like he told the committee that his pre-existing commitments prevent him from flying to Sweden. The statement also explained the prize still belongs to him as long as he receives it within 6 months from the ceremony.
Okay, well, the recipient being absent is a little bit unusual, but not unheard of, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. But that didn't stop people from making jokes. And I have to tell you, some of these tweets threw some serious jabs at the Nobel Prize Committee and Dylan. But let's start with one of the funnier side. A reporter tweeted, "Very sorry that Bob Dylan isn't going to Stockholm to accept his epic Nobel Prize. I realize it's bowling night, but still." And that kind of got me thinking, like, what else could he possibly be doing than accept mm-hmm. a Nobel Prize? I couldn't think of any. Maybe it is bowling after all. Another person wrote, "It's a humiliation of literature and that the prize should have been given to an actual writer." Another person argued, "They deserve this," that meaning the committee, "for awarding a Nobel Peace Prize to American former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger." Yikes. And the last one is my favorite because it has a social media twist to it. A tweet having social media flair that we're talking about on social media segment. Pretty meta, right?
Mm-hmm.
One person wrote this imaginary iMessage or social media messenger conversation between the committee and Dylan. "Committee, and the Nobel Prize goes to Bob Dylan." Bob Dylan, silent. "Committee, to Bob Dylan." Bob Dylan, there's a check mark seen at 10:45 a.m. Still no answer. Jim, well, back to you.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, G. And you win the prize for social media reporting. Thank
awesome.
You. You can follow our account at VOA_IE. I'm also out there at VOA Stevenson. And G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia: Pakistan holds military drill near Indian border amid tensions. Trump and Choigate could decrease focus on North Korean human rights. Uncertainty grips Philippines following Trump election. A report says conflicts over land in India stall projects worth billions of dollars. Prince William urges Vietnam to fight wildlife trade. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the VOANews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Republican congressional leaders are promising bold action when Donald Trump becomes president next year, while Democrats seethe over one of the president-elect's first picks for his White House staff. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports.
Student-led protests against President-elect Trump reached the Capitol, where Paul Ryan was nominated for another term as Speaker of the House of Representatives and reveled in his party's electoral fortunes.
Welcome to the dawn of a new, unified Republican government. Feels really good to say that, actually. This will be a government focused on turning President-elect Trump's victory into real progress for the American people. Our team is very excited, and we cannot wait to get to work.
Republicans want to lower taxes, end major portions of President Barack Obama's health care law, and deregulate the economy. They are relieved that Trump, not Democrat Hillary Clinton, will fill a Supreme Court vacancy.
We will quickly move forward once the nomination is made.
Democrats say Trump is off to a horrible start with the selection of Steve Bannon as his chief political advisor. Bannon runs a conservative website that trumpets white nationalist sentiment and rails against minorities.
This is someone who has expressed racist, sexist, anti-Semitic, anti-LGBT sentiments, and on and on and on. This is someone whose views do not belong in the White House.
As long as a champion of racial division is a step away from the Oval Office, it will be impossible to take Trump's efforts to heal the nation seriously.
Republicans say Trump is entitled to pick his team.
We had an election. The American people voted. The American people chose their next president.
Protests against Trump show no signs of easing for now.
I'm concerned about him building the wall. I'm concerned about what he's going to do to the Affordable Health Care Act, and I'm just concerned how our country is going to turn out for the next 4 years.
What's unknown for Republicans is whether Trump will feed or quell the polarizing furor that helped him on Election Day. That furor could distract from or impede a busy legislative agenda after his inauguration. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
New York subway riders upset with the outcome of the election are leaving their thoughts on the wall of one of the Manhattan stations. The messages, while a form of catharsis for many, reveal a common thread among locals, unity across religion, race, and gender, and a readiness to hold the next president accountable, Ramon Taylor reports.
Following last week's election of Donald Trump, many New York City locals could be seen across subway platforms wearing variations of the same look. Grief and disbelief. Those feelings evolved into conversation, including beneath the city's surface. Inside New York's Union Square subway station, subway therapy, as it is called, came alive for locals to express themselves and show solidarity with immigrants, religious and ethnic minorities, and the LGBT community. Still, anti-Trump emotions among many in this largely Democratic city were still running high.
I don't know how Obama was such a gentleman and was so civil towards him. I want to hit it with my stick, man.
So filled with violence and hate, and his plan to put walls. You know, I'm an Israeli, and I don't hate Muslim. What is this? It's crazy.
But there was also a sense of reckoning.
He might have other surprises, and I have to be open to that, because soon to be, that's my future is coming, and that's going to be my president.
He is president-elect, whether we like it or not.
Outside Manhattan, New York's Staten Island, which awarded President-elect Donald Trump with 57% of the vote, has taken a different tone in reaction to his presidency and widespread protests. Congregants at Taurus Emes, in a predominantly Russian Jewish community, have mixed opinions, but are generally more trusting of Trump than their Manhattan counterparts.
I have listened to his children, and they had impressed me very much like they would be fair and I think they have some kind of influence on their father or vice versa.
Still, the congregation's rabbi and spiritual leader admits he often has to play referee.
There's a famous expression, two Jews, three opinions.
He praises individual expression and has hoped that even in moments of upheaval and uncertainty, the country, like his congregation, can carry itself in a civilized manner.
Thank God, you know, we live in democracy. Yes, of course, there are people who are upset and they may protest, but okay, that's part of the democratic way.
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
And be sure to stop by our website, voanews.com, to see some of those messages in Ramon's report and his report itself. Russia's announcement Wednesday that it is withdrawing from the International Criminal Court is a symbolic blow to international justice, but will have no practical effect on the court, say experts. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
The Rome Statute created the court in 1998. 2 years later, Moscow signed on to but never ratified it. In withdrawing their signature, Moscow's foreign ministry accused the Hague-based court of not being truly independent and dismissed its work as one-sided and inefficient. The move comes a day after the court's chief prosecutor issued a report stating that the situation in Crimea and the city of Sevastopol factually amounts to an ongoing state of occupation by Russia over Ukraine. Moscow annexed the Ukrainian territory in March 2014 after a widely criticized referendum. Rights experts, including Human Rights Watch's Elizabeth Evanson, said Moscow's move would have no real effect on the court's work.
There's really no practical effect. In fact, Russia, even though it signed the ICC, it was never a member of the court. So this is really far from big news for the ICC itself.
Evanson said it does point to Russia's retreat from international commitments and justice. She said that Human Rights Watch sees that as part of a broader pattern of the harm Moscow is doing to ordinary people and their access to justice. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And be sure to check out more at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter at @VOA_IE and on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Fans of rock and roll Hall of Famers the Rolling Stones will get a chance to see some rare memorabilia from the group in New York. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, a new exhibit, Rolling Stones Exhibitionism, has opened in New York's West Village.
If you love the Rolling Stones, then Exhibitionism is for you. The show at New York's iconic Industria space in the West Village features 500 items from the Stones' storied career. It includes personal items, clothing, musical instruments, films, costumes, and other items in an immersive exhibition that follows the group from its beginnings until the present. Mick Jagger said at a pink carpet celebration when Exhibitionism opened in New York that each room offers visitors something they have never seen before.
Each room, we tried to make each room really different, so each room should be kind of like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that. So I think it's an entertaining like little walkthrough that you can spend an hour, you can linger, but, you know, it takes me an hour to go through.
For guitarist Keith Richards, a recreation of Edith Grove, the Stones' first shared apartment in London, brought back fond memories from decades ago.
That apartment is unbelievably, I looked at it, I'm home. In a way, there's a sense of nostalgia, but I think I walked away with it written, and how much the Stones mean to so many people, and in that way, it's kind of humbling in a way.
Exhibitionism also features several of the band's costumes and artworks by Andy Warhol, Alexander McQueen, Prada, Dior, Ossie Clark, and others. It also comes as the band is set to release its first studio album in 10 years in December. Mick Jagger says that the new album was very organic, coming out of a time in the studio when the band had other songs planned.
We were doing an album of new songs in London, and we got in the middle and we started to play blues, and then we did 12 of them in 3 days. So we said, okay, we'll put that out first. So we put, and it's a kind of homage to our blues heroes from our kind of teenage years.
Keith Richards says the new album, like the exhibit, harkens back to the band's roots.
It kind of made itself. We went in the studio and suddenly the blues invaded the room, and we just got carried away. And at the end of it, we didn't intend to make an album, but suddenly we realized there was an album there.
Exhibitionism will be in New York until March 12th of 2017, when it heads to Chicago, Illinois. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
We hope listening to International Edition has given you some satisfaction. If you'd like more, go to our website, voanews.com, where you can stream and download the program. Also, check us out on Facebook at VOA Now and on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is fully committed to an effective response to North Korea's atrocious human rights record. This year marks a milestone for U.S. policy regarding human rights in North Korea, said Deputy Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor Scott Busby. North Korea is one of the world's most repressive countries. Under its leader, Kim Jong-un, the totalitarian regime dominates every aspect of its citizens' lives. North Korean authorities commit egregious human rights violations, including extrajudicial killings, enslavement, torture, and prolonged arbitrary detention. It is estimated that the regime has locked away between 80,000 to 120,000 citizens in its vast network of political prisons. Many of these inmates are reportedly subject to torture of all kinds. Women prisoners have suffered forced abortions and have been forced to watch the infanticide of their newborn infants. These reports are deeply disturbing, and we condemn the North Korean government for its use of fear and cruelty to control its people, said Deputy Assistant Secretary Busby. The U.S. strategy to counter such violations in North Korea focuses on three key objectives. First, the U.S. seeks to increase international awareness of the dire human rights situation in North Korea. This includes amplifying the voices of defectors by sharing their stories and experiences under the oppressive North Korean regime. The second part of the strategy is to increase access to information for as many North Koreans as possible. To do this, the U.S. has partnered with defector-led organizations to push information into North Korea through networks built around the information markets. The final part of the strategy is accountability. As part of this effort, the U.S. released a report last July identifying 8 entities and 15 North Korean officials, including Kim Jong-un, who are responsible for or associated with serious human rights abuses and censorship. The United States will continue to let the North Korean regime know that any future relationship depends in part on the regime taking steps to improve its human rights record. In the meantime, the U.S. will seek every opportunity to give a voice to the voiceless and remind the North Korean people that they are not alone and not forgotten.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.